Imagine like looking at your phone and realizing that the outrage you feel right now, or the sudden urge to buy that trending stock isn't actually just you being you.
Right, it feels totally personal, but it's not.
Exactly. Or, that irresistible pull to jump into a comment section. It's actually the result of these highly coordinated traffic lights governing a whole city of attention that you can't even see.
Yeah, you think you're navigating your own path, right, forming independent opinions.
Right, but structurally, you are part of a massive synchronized assembly.
I mean, it really challenges our most basic assumptions about free will. We so fiercely defend this idea of individual autonomy.
Oh, absolutely.
But the underlying reality is that our behavior is deeply embedded in and, well, often dictated by a collective structure. We are fundamentally social creatures operating inside these engineered environments.
And that tension, that exact tension, is what we're going to explore today. So, welcome to today's deep dive.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Our mission right now is to shortcut our way to understanding this massive invisible force shaping our lives, which is us. Specifically, how you and I transform from isolated individuals into this massive collective force.
It's a huge topic.
It really is. And we're drawing on a fascinating comprehensive report titled The Mass: A Systematic Guide to Modern Collective Life. By the end of this deep dive, you will be able to look at your social media feed, the stock market, or even just the evening news, and instantly spot the underlying mechanics.
The invisible strings,
Yeah,
basically.
exactly. The strings of how modern society is mobilized, manipulated, and self-organized. The goal is to make sure you never feel totally overwhelmed by the chaos of modern information ever again. Okay, let's unpack this.
So to really get into the mechanics here,
Right.
we first have to discard a very old, very stubborn cliche.
Which is what?
Well, when we hear the word mass, we tend to picture an irrational mob, a sea of people just losing their minds together in the
Like the
streets.
pitchforks and torches.
Exactly. But this report argues something much more profound. The mass is actually a highly variable social formation. It's not inherently dumb, it's not inherently smart, passive, or active.
So it's just neutral.
Right, it's neutral. Our collective behavior at any given moment depends entirely on how our communication networks, our resources, and our institutions are actually structured.
I mean, we all know the ways we gather have evolved drastically over time, right? From gathering in town squares and passing out pamphlets to the whole broadcast era.
Where an entire nation sat in their living rooms watching the exact same evening news anchor at the exact same time.
Yeah, totally synchronized. But how is the shift to these hyper-personalized digital algorithms actually changed the fundamental structure of a crowd?
Well, that requires looking at the most fundamental distinction the report makes, which is the difference between a crowd and a mass.
Okay, lay it on me.
So a crowd is defined by physical co-presence. Think of like a riot, a music festival, or a line outside a highly anticipated movie premiere.
You can literally see the people around you.
Right. You're interacting in a bounded physical space, breathing the same air. A mass is completely different.
How so?
A mass is a large population of dispersed individuals who might literally never meet in their entire lives, yet they are linked by a shared orientation and mediated signals.
Okay, so let me see if I have this right. A crowd is like being in a mosh pit, where you are physically reacting to the person bumping into your shoulder.
Yes.
But a mass is like being in a massive subreddit, where you're sitting alone in your room, in the dark, but you're moving in perfect intellectual and emotional synchronization with a million strangers.
That is a highly accurate way to visualize it, yeah.
Yeah.
But the transition to the digital networked mass introduces a fascinating paradox.
Which is what, because I mean, if algorithms today are feeding me a hyper-personalized, totally unique stream of content based on my specific clicks, am I even part of a mass anymore, or am I just like an isolated consumer trapped in a digital bubble of one?
That question cuts to the core of the modern structural formation view. You feel isolated, but structurally, you are deeply connected.
Interesting.
Institutions and digital platforms produce common horizons of attention. So even if your feed is microsegmented to your highly specific tastes, you are still being assembled, categorized, counted, and monetized as a collective entity by those
Wait,
platforms.
so even in my hyper-specific niche, I am part of a block.
Exactly. The algorithms are constantly grouping you into behavioral clusters. You might not see the other million people in your cluster, but the platform does, and it coordinates your collective attention just as effectively as a television network broadcasting a single show.
Wow. That reframes things entirely. So the platform basically acts as the invisible infrastructure holding the mass together.
Exactly.
Okay, so now that we know we are plugged into this dispersed algorithmic structure, let's talk about the psychological impact. Like, what does being part of this mass actually do to our individual brains? Because we constantly see smart, rational people do highly irrational things the second they log online.
Yeah, we really do. And this brings us to a major tension in sociology between two very different psychological models. Historically, there's the classic crowd psychology model pioneered by Gustave Le Bon in the late 19th century.
Right, the guy who basically said, crowds make us stupid.
Pretty much. He argued that crowds literally strip away our individual critical judgment, replacing it with an unconscious contagion. He believed that merely being in a crowd makes you highly suggestible and, frankly, less intelligent.
I feel like that view is still incredibly popular today. I mean, the assumption is that the moment you join a group chat or a political forum, your IQ just plummets.
It is popular, yeah. But modern research proves it is fundamentally incomplete.
Okay, so what's missing?
The report outlines very specific structural conditions under which our independent judgment actually collapses. It does not happen magically just because we're in a group. It happens when the environment forces it.
So what are the triggers for that?
The major triggers for this epistemic collapse are high uncertainty, where you literally cannot verify claims yourself, coupled with high emotional arousal, like extreme fear or euphoric enthusiasm.
Oh, that sounds like a recipe for disaster.
It is. Mm-hmm. Add informational enclosure, which we typically call echo chambers, and you have a totally volatile mix.
The report also leans heavily into the concept of identity threat. Walk us through how that works mechanistically in the brain.
Yeah, identity threat is perhaps the most powerful mechanism here. It occurs when disagreeing with the group isn't just seen as having a different opinion. It is framed as betraying your entire tribe.
Like you're a traitor if you just ask a question.
Right. When your social survival or your core identity feels contingent on agreeing with the mass, a process called cognitive simplification takes over in your brain.
Cognitive simplification.
Yeah.
So you just stop thinking hard.
Basically. Nuance is perceived as a threat. Complexity is reduced to vivid binaries. Us versus them, heroes versus traitors, good versus evil. The brain conserves energy by adopting the group consensus because the social cost of independent thought is simply too high.
Wow. I see the theory, and I see how that leads to dangerous groupthink, but let's pressure test this a bit. I hear the echo chamber argument constantly, but isn't it true that crowds frequently outperform isolated experts? Like, look at open source coding, or thousands of fans collectively solving a complex internet mystery in a matter of hours. How does that fit into a model of cognitive collapse?
What's fascinating here is that the structural formation view entirely accounts for this.
Oh, it does?
Yes. A mass is not inherently dumb. A crowd only becomes epistemically weak, as the report calls it, when social influence totally overwhelms independent information.
In other words, when I stop forming my own opinion and just copy whatever the loudest influencer in my feed is shouting.
Precisely. However, collective intelligence absolutely emerges under the right conditions. It happens when a group preserves diverse information and, most crucially, maintains relative independence.
Relative independence. Meaning what, exactly?
That means the structure forces individuals to form their initial judgments before they see what everyone else thinks.
Okay, give me an example of that.
Think of guessing the number of jelly beans in a jar. If everyone shouts their guess out loud, their early loud voices skew the results. People start anchoring to those numbers.
Right, they get influenced.
But if everyone writes their guess down secretly, the average is almost always shockingly accurate. If you combine that independent thought with reliable mechanisms for aggregating those ideas and a culture that protects dissenting voices so errors can be corrected, a mass can solve incredibly complex dynamic problems that would baffle a single expert.
That makes perfect sense. So it's not about the size of the group, it's about the rules of engagement.
Exactly.
So if the psychological conditions are right, how does a diffuse feeling of frustration among a bunch of isolated individuals actually ignite into a coordinated, world-changing event? I mean, how do we go from a million people privately annoyed about something in their living rooms to a global movement?
Well, the report breaks this transformation down using the MSS10 framework. It is a step-by-step mechanical sequence of how collective action is formed.
Let's trace it. Where does it start?
It begins with a latent condition. This is a private pain, maybe economic stress from inflation, status anxiety, or frustration with an institutional failure. People are experiencing it, but they think they are suffering alone.
Yeah, think about the last time you were dealing with a deeply frustrating issue at work or in your community, and you just assumed it was just your bad luck. That is the latent condition.
Right. Then comes step two, recognition. This is the moment you see a viral video on your feed or read a deeply relatable article and you realize, wait, this isn't just me. This is a shared pattern.
Your private trouble instantly transforms into a public issue in your mind.
Which leads directly to attribution. People need a narrative to make sense of the shared pain. What is the cause? Who is to blame?
So someone has to point the finger.
Exactly. Competing narratives fight in the public square to define the enemy. Is it a structural economic issue, a corrupt class of elites, a foreign power?
And once a dominant enemy is defined,
then the mass enters emotional synchronization. Vivid events, specific music, or repeated images align everyone's underlying fear, anger, or hope into a single cohesive emotional frequency.
And then comes identity crystallization. This is where the hashtags, the shared symbols, the profile picture filters come in.
Yes.
It turns this parallel concern into a deeply felt we. We are this group fighting that group.
And this brings us to the most critical step, the bottleneck that often determines if a movement actually changes the world or just dies on the internet. Organizational brokerage.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, folks.
Yeah.
Because the emotion is basically useless without the plumbing.
The plumbing.
Yeah. If I understand this right, organizational brokerage is the infrastructure. It's the local organizers, the forum moderators, the legal defense funds, and the media networks that connect otherwise separate clusters of angry people. They provide the logistics.
That's a great way to put it. They translate raw attention into strategic action. Without brokers, a mass is just a fleeting burst of digital emotion.
I like to think of this whole process as lighting a campfire. The latent grievance is the dry wood. The attribution, pointing the finger at who is to blame, is the spark. But the organizational brokerage is the wind that turns it into a wildfire. It gives the fire oxygen and pushes it in a specific direction.
A very functional analogy. And that wind creates the final major step, which is a threshold cascade.
What's a threshold cascade?
Well, human beings have different thresholds for risk. Early actors, the true believers, take a major risk and make their participation visible, say, by protesting in the street or buying a highly volatile asset.
The brave ones go first.
Exactly. And as their perceived support grows, the risk of joining decreases for everyone else. When people see trending lists, poll numbers, or massive crowds, those with a higher threshold for risk finally jump in.
Because it feels safe now.
Right. And the cascade rapidly accelerates until joining the mass feels safer than ignoring it.
Let me stop you there, though. We see severe grievances all the time, right?
Wow.
Extreme poverty, massive public corruption, failing infrastructure. Why do some of those issues never turn into a movement? Why does the wood just sit there, perfectly dry but totally unlit?
Because severe grievance does not spontaneously produce action. The mechanics have to be activated.
Right.
People need that common interpretation, they need the organizational resources, and they need visible opportunities to act without facing immediate ruin.
So it's not just about how bad things are.
Not at all. The report points out a very pragmatic reality about power. Elites do not maintain control by persuading everyone that things are perfect. They maintain control simply by keeping grievances fragmented.
Divide and conquer.
Exactly. If a population is kept individualized, fighting amongst themselves over minor differences, or structurally convinced that systemic change is impossible, the wood will never catch fire.
To truly grasp this Mass S10 framework, we need to apply it to the real world. We need to see these underlying mechanics operating across totally different spheres of our lives to prove that it's the structure, not the specific topic, that drives the behavior.
Right. And before we do, we need to establish a very clear ground rule for our listeners.
Yes, absolutely.
We are going to look at several recent, highly charged events across finance, culture, and politics. We are analyzing these impartially, purely as diagnostic illustrations of human behavioral mechanics.
Just to be completely clear, we are not endorsing any political viewpoint, left or right, and we are not making moral equivalencies between the causes themselves. We are strictly looking at the structural engine.
Exactly.
Okay, let's start with a wild example from the financial world. The GameStop short squeeze in 2021. If we apply the Mass S10 framework here, how does it hold up?
It maps perfectly, but adapted for a financial mass. You had a highly complex, obscure market structure hedge funds aggressively short selling a retail stock.
Which is the latent condition.
Right. And that latent condition was suddenly condensed on Reddit into a highly simple, morally legible narrative. Everyday retail investors versus greedy Wall Street elites.
So attribution and identity crystallization happen in overdrive. But how did the mechanics actually drive the price?
Social media forums acted as the organizational brokers, coordinating the timing. But the crucial mechanism was the financial market itself, which creates an unavoidable feedback loop.
How so?
Well, attention drove up the stock price, and because of how short selling works, the rising price forced the hedge funds to buy the stock to cover their losses.
Oh, which drove the price even higher.
Exactly. This validated the narrative, drawing in more media attention. Holding the stock became a literal badge of collective identity. But mechanically, the market eventually converted that online solidarity into wildly unequal financial outcomes, depending entirely on the exact moment an individual bought in or sold out.
Wow. So we saw how financial leverage triggered the GameStop cascade. But what happens when that exact same mechanical energy is channeled into pure culture? Let's look at the BTS army, the global fandom for the K-pop group BTS.
This case is vital because it totally shatters the 20th century idea that a mass audience is just passively consuming entertainment.
Right, they aren't just watching TV.
No, the BTS army operates as a highly sophisticated, distributed organization. Mechanically, they use deep parasocial attachment to coordinate on a massive scale.
Let me jump in right there. For anyone who hasn't studied media psychology, break down what parasocial attachment actually is and how it functions as a mechanism here.
Sure. Parasocial attachment is when an individual forms a strong, one-sided psychological bond with a public figure. You feel like you know them intimately, almost like a close friend, even though they don't know you exist.
And the platforms encourage this, right?
Massively. Yeah. Platforms nurture this through constant behind-the-scenes content and direct-to-fan messaging. It creates a profound sense of mutual obligation.
And the fans leverage that obligation into collective action. Like, they aren't just buying concert tickets, they are structurally organizing. They coordinate massive global streaming goals to manipulate algorithmic charts. They crowdsource translations into dozens of languages in real time. And they mobilize massive charity fundraisers.
They exhibit strict norms, internal discipline, and shared symbols. It proves that the digital mass can be an active, self-governing entity that converts collective attention into very real, quantifiable, cultural, and economic power.
If the BTS army is a cultural mass, let's look at a segmented political mass, the 2024 U.S. presidential campaign. Why classify an election as a mass movement? Isn't it just, you know, traditional marketing?
Because a modern election is the MS-10 framework fully industrialized. The report calls it segmented mass democracy.
Segmented mass democracy.
Right. An election is no longer a spontaneous expression of the public will. It is a highly organized, heavily funded algorithmic mediation of attention.
Meaning the campaigns use vast voter files and micro-targeting to identify the latent conditions of very specific demographics and then activate them.
Exactly. And the primary mechanism they rely on is effective polarization.
Effective polarization. What does that mean in practice?
This is the structural strategy of making voters fear and despise the opposing coalition more than they actually love their own party's policy positions.
Wow. So it's voting out of fear, basically.
It's not mind control voters, still have agency and prior beliefs, but it is a highly engineered structural competition to define the agenda, manage identity threats, and trigger emotional synchronization on a national scale.
If the election is the highly industrialized top-down version of this, how do more spontaneous, decentralized events compare mechanically? The report contrasts the Black Lives Matter protests of 2020, the Bud Light boycott of 2023, and the QAnon movement.
The differences in their mechanics are incredibly revealing. Black Lives Matter in 2020 demonstrated how decentralized mass mobilization works. A long-standing latent grievance regarding policing was triggered by vivid, irrefutable video evidence. That video bypassed traditional media gatekeepers and synchronized emotion globally in a matter of hours.
The network speed was staggering.
It was. Decentralized digital networks allowed for rapid scaling of physical protests, though that same lack of central organizational brokerage made unified, long-term policy messaging much more challenging.
Contrast that with the Bud Light boycott. That wasn't about physical protests. It showed how brand identity can be weaponized.
Exactly. A localized marketing decision was framed by online influencers as a massive cultural conflict. Mm-hmm. But mechanically, the boycott succeeded because of the extremely low cost of participation.
It was just so easy to join.
Right. It wasn't necessarily about deeply held ideological conviction for every single participant. It was about substitution signaling.
Substitution signaling.
Yeah. When you're at the grocery store, grabbing a different brand of beer takes zero extra effort. but it allows you to publicly signal your group identity and avoid social sanction from your peers. The mechanism was pure, frictionless identity enforcement.
And how does that differ from something highly complex like QAnon?
QAnon represents what the report calls a participatory conspiracy. It didn't rely on a single, clear manifesto handed down from a leader. Instead, the mechanism was gamification. It offered highly ambiguous clues, so-called drops.
So followers weren't just reading, they were actively playing a game.
Exactly. Every time they decoded a clue themselves, they got a neurological dopamine hit. This built a profound epistemic identity.
Because they felt they were independently discovering the truth.
Yes. Their psychological commitment to the narrative became impenetrable. The mechanism of gamified discovery turned any disconfirming evidence into further proof of a deeper cover-up.
Looking at all these radically different examples, from day traders exploiting short squeezes to K-pop fans leveraging parasocial bonds, to political campaigns industrializing fear, to the gamification of conspiracy theories, is there a single common denominator?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the absolute common denominator across all these modern cases is the synthesis of identity and media infrastructure.
Say more about that.
To exercise power today, you cannot just broadcast a message to a passive audience and hope they listen. You have to turn an audience into active participants who feel that their core identity, their very sense of we, is on the line.
And the infrastructure.
Simultaneously, you have to provide them with the digital infrastructure to make their actions instantly visible to others, which is what triggers that threshold cascade we talked about.
So what does this all mean for you and me as we navigate this world? I mean, it means the mass is ultimately a field of collective capacity.
Right, it's a tool.
It isn't good or evil by default. It can be a force for incredible democratic reform, for mutual aid, and for toppling entrenched corruption. Or it can be a terrifying vehicle for panic, for exclusion, and for reputational destruction.
It all depends on the underlying mechanics. Our access to plural information, our structural ability to think independently before we act, and the transparency of the institutions that are organizing our attention.
And the practical application for you, the listener, is just crucial here. The next time you feel a sudden, intense urge to join an online pile-on, or buy a trending speculative asset, or share a viral outrage post, just pause.
Just take a breath.
Yeah. Ask yourself the diagnostic questions. Who selected this message for my feed? Which of my specific emotions is being deliberately activated? And how is my attention being converted into someone else's structural power?
That 3-second pause is everything. It is the literal difference between being an active participant in society and being a puppet of the algorithm. And this raises one final, incredibly important question for you to mull over after we wrap up. The report hints at the imminent arrival of generative AI and what it calls the synthetic mass environment.
The synthetic mass environment. That sounds intense.
It is. We just spent this entire time establishing that a mass is built on shared signals and social proof we act because we see other humans acting. But what happens to our collective intelligence when the people we are imitating, the voices in the ring with us, the outrage in the comments, the trending consensus are completely synthetic?
Oh, wow. If the traffic lights governing our attention are being run by bots.
Exactly. When AI can flawlessly impersonate trusted voices and automate grassroots organizational brokerage at a scale of millions of posts per second,
yeah.
How will you know if the movement you are feeling so deeply compelled to join is actually human at all?
That is wow.
That is the next frontier of the digital mass, and it is something every single one of us needs to watch very carefully as this technology scales.
That is a terrifying, clarifying, and just essential thought to end on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay insanely curious, keep asking those diagnostic questions, and remember to look for the mechanics driving the crowd. We'll catch you next time.